The FTC, yes, the Trump FTC, is suing Uber. Now, the allegation, I'm going to quote, is that Uber charged consumers for its Uber One subscription service without their consent, failed to deliver promised savings, and made it difficult for users to cancel the service. I want you to walk us through why you think the FTC might be a little bit aggressive in this case.
I like what the FTC is doing with cracking down on tactics that are against consumer interest. So obviously I'm long Uber, you know, I don't have to state that. But when I see like Wall Street Journal and it's impossible to unsubscribe, I've talked about it here countless times. I hate this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's infuriating.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by NetSuite, the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform, giving you one source of truth. Download the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning for free at netsuite.com/twist. Gusto. Gusto is easy online payroll, benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses. Get 3 months free when you run your first payroll at gusto.com/twist. And Vanta. Compliance and security shouldn't be a deal breaker for startups to win new business. Vanta makes it easy for companies to get a SOC 2 report fast. Twist listeners can get $1,000 off for a limited time at vanta.com/twist.
All right, everybody, welcome back to This Week in Startup. I'm in my hometown, New York. New York. The city's so nice, they named it twice. Got to see my Knicks lose last night. And heading to, I guess, the worst city in America, or top three worst cities in America.
Detroit. We love the Motor City here.
It's like Philly, Detroit,
Chicago. Hometown Philly.
These are the worst cities. Boston, of course, leading the pack. No, I'm just doing this based on the sports teams that the Knicks are up against.
How dare you.
But every year, just so you boys know, you know, when my friend Tony Hsieh died, I talk about it a lot here on the program because he meant so much to me. When he died 4 years ago, I really gave some thought to, like, is there anything I like to do other than work? You know, and like, I'm not like a big work-life balance guy. I like to just really grind. And there were two things that came up. Going to the Knicks games in the playoffs specifically, which doesn't happen that often for my team. you know, we've had like 6-7 year droughts and then like, you know, play four games and get swept. And then skiing. And specifically, you know, skiing with my daughters. I'm putting aside, like, just completely selfishly, putting aside what I do professionally, putting aside what I do with my family, you know, those are obviously top priorities. But then, like, you know, in third, like, what is there anything that like nurtures my soul in some way or fills my bucket? And I never thought that way, you know, Irish Catholic, I got the guilt about doing anything. So those are my two things. And I just treat myself to, if the Knicks are in the playoffs, I just go see a couple of games, two or three games. And, you know, I did okay in this life. I made a little bit of money. And, I don't spend any money on anything. Like, I don't fly private or anything. I fly coach a lot. I drive a Model Y that I've had for 5 years, 4 or 5 years. You know, I'm very frugal. You guys know that. Except when I go to dinner, which long.
I've also noticed that.
Yeah.
I do allow myself that. So maybe there's three things on my list. But, you know, I decided I've only got a certain number. If my team only goes to the playoffs like 30% of the time, I could be gone in 10 years, 5, 3, you know, 20, who knows? I've got like, I don't know, maybe like 10 playoff series that I could probably go to, maybe 20 in my life. So I got to get a couple in every year if they go. And I got courtside seats in Detroit.
No, yes. Really?
Well, here's the thing. In New York City, getting courtside seats, impossible. And right. Because they're all owned by corporates and, you know, finance guys. And it's just hard to get. I can usually get like third, fourth, fifth row. I got a pair of free tickets, which was very nice. Autopilot, like this stock trading app, they reached out when they saw it and they're like, oh, our lawyer has tickets, come with us. And I was like, all right, great. They dropped two free tickets on me. So I went, and it was like pretty, really good seats, 12th row center. You know, I usually sit in better seats, but really good seats. And the price was dynamite. Anyway, the show must go on. We got a lot going on.
Yes, go Warriors.
I was in the Big Easy, New Orleans. For a birthday party this past weekend. It was wonderful. Although, like, I'm a foodie and like I like have to go to the top three restaurants, but I was like kind of on somebody else's agenda. So we had food, but it wasn't like the best. But I got to go to Café du Monde.
Right. I was going to say, you got the beignets. You did the beignets.
I got the beignets and the chicory coffee. I realized we do need to do the Twist Live Tour. So announcing it now, Twist Live Tour is coming. We're going to do 5 cities in 5 days or something lunacy like that. We're all going to go live.
Heck yeah.
1 week, 5 cities, 5 days. We'll do the East Coast once and then maybe in another thing. So we're going to set that up for y'all to come. It'll be for fans, by the fans. But when I was there, I went to one of these old auction houses over 100 years. And I don't know if you have it there, but I saw two items that were very inspiring to me. One is the Enigma machine. If you've never seen the movie with Cumberbatch, am I pronouncing
that? That's The Imitation Game. You are pronouncing it correctly. The Imitation Game is a movie. Benedict Cumberbatch is the
guy. Great movie. I don't know if it's a great movie. I enjoyed the
movie.
It's
a pretty good movie.
Yeah, it's a solid movie. It's like a 7 or something. Solid 7. You know, it's not like a 5, you know, 10 out of 10, I think you would agree, Lon. But, you know, we cracked the Enigma code, and then we got to know what the Germans, the Nazis, were going to do next. Because, I don't want to ruin it for people, but, you know, at the end of every time, I think this is how the story goes, at the end of every time they would send a message with this Enigma machine, which was a code-breaking machine, they would end it with Hail Hitler. And then these code breakers knew, well, okay, we can work backwards. We know two words in the puzzle, and maybe we can figure out the rest of the words. Anyway, they figured it out. The movie's great. This is one of the giant Enigma machines. There's small Enigma machines. They go for like $250,000, whatever. They come up once in a while. People collect them. It's like a piece of history. And then this is the giant one with like more wheels and more complex, made by Siemens. Yeah. And I almost bought it. I was going to buy it. I'll be honest. I was going to buy it and put it in the background. And then I was like, I don't think I can buy a Nazi object. Lon, help me out here. Is this in my head? Because I just had this flashback, or I just had this moment that somebody was going to write a headline. Right, Jason Calacanis collects Nazi memorabilia.
Nazi memorabilia. I think this is Allied memorabilia, personally. Like, this was how we brought them down. And I think that's acceptable, like collecting World War II memorabilia from the good guys, from the Brits or the Americans or the Australians or the Canadians. We are all on very solid ground. I think, you know, like French resistance stuff would be cool. I think it's just, you don't want, it's like when people have like the knives that the German soldiers carried, or like those plates with the swastika on them that in cabaret they would have been eating off of. That's not cool. You don't want to own that stuff.
I think an Enigma machine without Nazi iron crosses draped over it is indicative of us kicking their butts. Therefore, it's war spoils.
Okay.
Don't turn it into a fan club.
Let's get to the news. I know there's a lot of news, and then we have an office hours at the end, and in between we got to do our brackets for our March Madness.
First up on the docket today is something from Nick Huber that Jason flagged for the show today. I'm going to go ahead and pull up the tweet here and then read it for everybody. Mm-hmm. Nick Huber, if you don't know, he's at Sweaty Startup on Twitter. I would call him, Jason, a highly caffeinated entrepreneur business technology guy. And he wrote that he was, quote, pro-tariffs until about 30 of our clients at somewhere.com canceled searches over the past 3 weeks. Hiring freezes all over the place. Hit me in the pocketbook already. And then in all caps, remove tariffs.
Hey, man, the all caps is my thing. And Ari from Manhattan, another Knicks fan who just only tweets in all caps. But if somebody is taking the Ari J-Cal all caps, you know it's important. That's like, you know, all hands on deck, red alert, and code red. I did a tweet also just last week. I started, Grok is amazing in Twitter, by the way. I asked Grok to analyze my own tweet, like that layoffs are coming. And they're like, yeah, Jason Calacanis is absolutely correct. Here are all the layoffs. And it found other tweets with the layoffs. So like, you know how I ask you guys or the researchers, hey, find me the other like examples of this. Like Grok just does it now. But there's a little Grok button, I hit it. And I found like maybe 8 or 9 examples of layoffs that I wasn't aware of. Mm-hmm. And these things are slowly trickling out. The good news is, as of the taping, today, Wednesday, April 23rd, 11 a.m. New York time, it seems like, as I predicted, Trump would stand down. Why is Trump standing down? There's really 2 or 3 reasons here. Number one, the market has told him, if you're going to do this, we will push back by lowering stocks. The bond market, boom. Now, entrepreneurs, I'm going to stop hiring. You can only overplay your hand so much, and the world reacts to it. This is very important for entrepreneurs to understand, is that they have power. And the power is in the hiring freeze, the layoffs, the stock prices, et cetera. They just all give feedback. And I think Besant, who was on the All In interview, did a great interview. He is very thoughtful. This guy is like very thoughtful Democrat, like Clinton, like era Democrat, who really knows what he's doing based on what I can tell. And from what I understand, he's got Trump's ear right now. He's driving the train on this. They're going to do what they should have done from the start, which is a very slow rollout of tariffs. with more certainty.
Doing business and making deals would be a lot simpler if you had a crystal ball, obviously. Hey, if you've got a future prediction startup, contact me. I'm going to write you a check. You're coming to my accelerator. But until then, one way to future-proof your business is with our amazing partner, NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one ERP tool on the market today, and it's trusted by over 40,000 businesses for a reason. But you might be asking, what does NetSuite do? Okay, you're at a startup. Maybe you wonder, who is this NetSuite I keep hearing about? Well, it's going to take all your accounting, inventory, financial management, and HR and put it into one easy-to-use platform, one source of truth, one resource to check for anything you need to know about your business. That's going to give you real-time insights and allow you to forecast with the visibility and control you need to make great decisions. It's like being a fighter pilot. You've got all those important instruments right at your fingertips so you can go fast, beat the competition, and grow your business. So NetSuite is going to help you have all that reliable information when you need it. Founders, you're going to need to know about it. And a great first step is to get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning. So speaking of opportunities, go ahead and download the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/twist. The guide is free for you at netsuite.com/twist. That's netsuite.com/twist.
If you have uncertainty, everybody freezes. Imagine you hear a loud noise on the street. You hear firecrackers going off. Is it firecrackers? Is it a gun? You hear some, you know, these things happen. Everybody just pauses. And the next piece was Sheil, who's got a great Twitter handle. And he's just really good at summarizing like the important news stories. Highly recommend following Sheil. We should have him on the pod soon. What is his Twitter handle?
It's at PitDesi, P-I-T-D-E-S-I.
Desi, yes. And so he's a really nice guy. I like him a lot. Very thoughtful, yeah. Anyway, read his tweet because this is also important.
Yes. Sheil writes, heard from an investment banker that had 12 M&A deals in flight a month ago. All 12 are paused. Too much uncertainty. Liquidity on hold. So just Jason, backing you up here. Yeah. Other VCs are saying the same thing, that uncertainty really is right now an absolute killer. The question that I have, though, is your encapsulation of what Trump's going to do. I agree it's a U-turn. I would call it a retreat. But the latest that I saw from the Wall Street Journal is that the White House is considering lowering tariffs on China to about 50 to 65%. That is so much better than 145%.
I think, yeah, it was 145 or something plus some amount. I mean, that was one of the things about even the execution of this. It wasn't like there was a website that explained it and what the carve-outs were. Like, if you're going to do something like destabilize the entire global economy and, you know, damage the American brand as a trustworthy, predictable partner, like, you're going to get feedback. And the way to avoid this kind of critical feedback, market feedback, especially, I mean, it's one thing for talking heads like us to be talking about this. It's another thing for people who are in commerce, Lon, to be taking actions. And I started to get wind of this in week two, and I started talking about here on the show, all in, and tweeting it. I'm hearing from everybody, like, I got to do some layoffs here because there's too much uncertainty, so I'll cut 10%, 5%, 15%, what should I cut? And this was small companies, this was medium-sized companies like Cuts, when we had Steven on, right, Steven?
Steven from Cuts. That's what I was going to say, is Steven from Cuts, that was his perspective. It's like, it wasn't even the tariffs themselves. He's like, he could have dealt with that, would find, you know, suppliers in different places, I'll work around it. It was the lack of communication about, like, well, where can I find another supplier? And is that going to get me into a tariff problem next week? Like, I can't go to Vietnam. I can't go to, you know, all these other markets that maybe I could have started supplying from. So I think, yeah, I think that's a key point, that if this was rolled out in a way that was clearer, it might not have been such a epic, immediate disaster for everybody.
Trump says stuff. And remember my, like, number four rule of Trump, like, number one is Trump says stuff. Trump says a lot of stuff is like rule number one. I went right to rule number four, wait 72 hours before responding. And then, like, life's a negotiation is like number six or something. I haven't filled in all the other ones. I'm calling it like seven rules of, and I'm open to suggestions. If you have them, just tweet at me. But I do think what we're seeing here is the Trump two-step, as you called it, which is he just says a lot of stuff. The team's got to figure it out. He gets market feedback and then he sort of adjusts like a comedian does, working out a bit on stage.
Yeah.
The problem is working out a bit with the global economy.
Terrible idea.
Yeah. It's not good. And so I think we're on the other side of it. I'll be totally honest, because if this were to continue for two or three more weeks, the whole concept of we're doing this for Main Street would get taken off the table. That would be like, well, if you're doing it for Main Street and everybody's losing their jobs and prices right. are going up,
yeah,
how is that for Main Street? So it seems like you took out Wall Street and then you dropped a second bomb 3 days later on Main yeah. Street. Like,
the guys who work for Mack Trucks are on Main Street. Those are not yes. Wall Street guys. Yeah. yeah.
Now, their stock may trade also, and Volvo is some stock and, you know, whatever. There might be some rich group of people who own those shares. And yes, they get hit first and then wait for the aftershock, which is, yeah, oh, rich people lose their money. You know what they do? Ah. They stop building businesses. They go on vacation. You know what I would do if it was like a cataclysmic thing? I'd just retire. I'd be like, you know what? I could just afford to retire. I'll just do a podcast twice a week, three times a week, and call it a day. So here we are. I think we can move on from this and get more to tech news. The big lesson for founders is to stay focused on your customers, your product, and your team. A startup is three things: a team that builds a product that delights customers. Over these 3 or 4 weeks, you could have been doom scrolling, you could be hand wringing, you could be looking at stock prices, you know, and I get it. You want to stay informed. But if you had just 3 weeks ago on April 1st, you know, and this happened on April 2nd, Independence Day, whatever it was, you could have just focused on your product and customers. You could have done 20 product customer interviews. You could have shipped two more features. You could have added a team member. All that wasted energy on the news cycle. So stay focused, folks.
A story that I'm so incredibly happy to bring up is that Cursor, which is the product from the company Anysphere, it's a series of AI tools that help developers write code, do agentic stuff. It's in that bucket of lovable and yeah. so forth.
Fastest to 100 million in revenue, right, of all time, I think. It was the fastest to 100 million.
It's either the fastest or like top two. It's a little hard to gauge. But yeah, Jason, one of the fastest growing companies of all time. We covered it recently on the show because after reaching 100 million ARR at the end of 2024, it grew to 200 million ARR in March. And we were like, wow, that's crazy. Well, turns out we should have been more impressed because now TechCrunch reports from two sources that it's 300 million ARR, which means it grew 50% in like roughly a month or something along those lines. I don't really recall seeing a product grow in terms of revenue this fast since like OpenAI turned on paid subscriptions to ChatGPT. It's just such an insane business to me, Jason. Have you seen a company grow this fast ever?
I mean, sure, we've not this fast, but this is growing like a consumer startup that went viral, but it's a SaaS product. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're seeing here. If you can get consumer growth of a paid SaaS product, that creates just a wild experience. Examples of this would be when Disney Plus launched. It's a consumer product, but it's got a subscription model. And it was like, whoa, they're at 10 million. Whoa, they're at 30 million. I think they went blew past 100 million. It was like a great offering. Another example in the consumer space of a paid product that's also consumer that mixed both, or a business-to-business product that did this with Slack. This thing started spreading like wildfire. If you're not on Slack, like, what are you doing? Like, get off HipChat, get off IRC. And that one had an incredible ramp up when you look at that. And before that, David Sachs' company, my bestie, Yammer, was his. So that's what you got to look at is, you know, when you can have the virality of a consumer product match with the low churn enterprise value, enterprise subscriptions. Let's pause for a second here and think about total addressable market. Let's refer to as TAM in our industry. And I'm going to need you two guys at your keyboards ready to go. Alex, how much does the product cost? Lon, how many developers are there in the world? I think it's $20 a month for Cursor. I believe it's 15 million developers in the world. Like people who have it as a full-time job, go take a look and then we'll times those numbers.
I mean, Statista is telling me 28.7 million software developers worldwide in 2024.
I would put at 25 million. 25 million. 25 million you're paying, if all 25 million use this, and then how much is it per month? 20 a month, am I right?
$20 a month for the pro plan or $40 a month for a business plan. Both are discounted on a yearly basis.
Great. So let's just go with $30. $30, 25 million. Okay, 3 times 25 is 750. Add a zero. Is that 700? Yeah, 3
it
times...
It works out to 9 billion on a yearly basis. So 25 million, $30 times 12 months.
Got it. So 25 million, yeah. If it was $3 a month, that would be 75 million, 750 million a month. All right, you didn't start your company to run payroll, did you? Of course not. We all know that. Gusto is here to help. Gusto is going to help you
run your payroll and handle all your benefits, onboarding, and HR all in one place. The market agrees. 300,000 businesses trust Gusto today, and you can too. As your startup scales, Gusto is going to grow with you. You got state and federal taxes handled for your staff around the country. Gusto does all that. And hey, maybe it's finally time for you to offer a 401k plan for your team, right? Gusto's got you on that. And you might need to get your compliance sorted, right? Well, 3 out of 4 employers say Gusto helps them be government compliant. And even better, Gusto is simple, easy to use software. So you can focus on what matters, building your startup. So here's your quick call to action. Do you want all Gusto has to offer with no hidden fees? Well, how about a discount? Try Gusto and get 3 months free. Gusto.com/twist. That's GUSTO.com/twist.
In TAM. And then if your times it by 10, 7.5 million, then yeah, 1.5, yeah, $9 billion in revenue currently in TAM for this one product. And this is like a very affordable product at $30 a month. $9 billion in TAM with a gross margin of 75%. It's got to be 80% gross margin, I would guess. Something crazy. You start thinking about the EBITDA potential of this product. If this company threw off $5 billion in EBITDA, $5 billion times 20, which is, you know, a pretty conservative, I think you would say, 25 would be high, 15 would be low. So let's put it at 20. $5 billion in profits times 20, $100 billion company. This is a $100 billion company if they get the entire market, if it's a winner-take-all market. It's not going to be a winner-take-all market, but if they have half that market, it's a $50 billion company if they get half the market. If they get a third of the market, and it's $30 billion, you get the idea.
Yeah. I think the market's actually larger than we're estimating. I'm not quite sure why, but I'm just thinking that $9 billion feels small to me. So I would actually, if blindfolded guessing, I would have said 20.
That's
I
think just TAM. Current TAM.
Yeah, the TAM will expand. I agree. As more people become developers and so forth.
Two ways it's going to expand. More people become developers. And then the second one is they add adjacencies and more expensive products, right? So this is not the only product they're ever going to have. So you're absolutely right. TAM can expand two ways. Horizontally, vertically. You get more users, you get more features. Boom.
Uh-huh. Just for fun, for folks out there who are paying attention, currently Cursor is reported to be working on a $10 billion valuation in its next round. $300 million ARR, Jason, 33x ARR. TechCrunch also reported that Windsurf, who we had on the program, that was December 20th, 2024, episode 2064. If anyone wants to go back and take a look at that. That company grew from 42, I think 100 million ARR and is raising at about a $3 billion valuation. So again, about 30X. So we're seeing, I think, some price sorting out in the market about how to value these high growth AI companies. And it's about 30X ARR if you're growing at a simply insane clip. But yeah. I think I'd be happy to invest in either Windsurf or Cursor because why
welcome
not?
Welcome to the power law. You know, if you hit, man, these things can become very big, very fast. We do have the issue we talked about in a previous episode of people sampling products in this category where they'll buy a bunch of subscriptions like Paramount Plus or Disney Plus. And then, you know, they take their 10 subscriptions down to 5. They're 5 phrases that they can't live without. That will happen in this space. And so, you know, we'll wait and see, you know, who the winners and losers are, consolidation. But this is the thing. When you have a company like this, the most important thing to do is not sell it. The most important thing to do is to build a war chest and to obsess on making the product sticky so you don't have any churn. If you do those two things when it's growing like that, no churn and war chest. War chest, war chest, war chest. Having the capital as a weapon is what we saw with Uber beating Lyft. We saw it with Airbnb beating a bunch of copycats. Capital as a weapon with DoorDash raised a bunch of money for their category. They outraised everybody in food. Capital as a weapon is the key thing. They should raise as much money as possible. I know it sounds crazy, but I think that this category is very easy to put a product out in this category. There's so many people doing it that you really want to use that capital as a weapon, be able to lower prices and then drown out competitors, right?
If you were a Cursor, Jason, and you're looking at the ability to raise at a $10 billion valuation, so you can raise with very, very little dilution, would you go out and buy smaller regional competitors? Like if there was the EU Cursor, 100%. And the APAC Cursor.
Okay. Yes, 100%. Yeah, you would buy them, you would invest in them, you would create the Cursor venture arm of the company. Like there's all kinds of creative things you can do to just solidify your position. Cursor Labs, where you do like weird hackathons and you invest in companies. All of these things can really work. You see NVIDIA doing that, right? That's part of the playbook there. Oh, Google did its own corporate venture arm. So if it's me, it's not. I've never built a company that's 300 million in revenue. I think I got the best I ever did. Was, yeah, I got to 12 million in revenue for Silicon Valley Reporter. I sold Weblog Zing very early, but it also got to 25 million like within 2 years of me selling it to AOL. So in the fourth year, and then Mahalo at its peak had 11 million in revenue run rate. So, I have gotten to eight digits and typically sold the company. So I would raise 2 billion. I would raise 2 billion. I would have a war chest. I would dilute 20%. I would have a sick war chest. And then I would go do what you're saying, buy other companies, invest in other companies. Look at what NVIDIA did. Like, very hard to compete with NVIDIA when, you know, they're investing in CoreWeave or whatever. And you know, kind of locking up distribution. What else is in the news?
Well, you mentioned Uber, so I think we'd be remiss to not talk about the fact that the FTC, yes, the Trump FTC, is suing Uber. Now, the allegation, I'm going to quote, is that Uber charged consumers for its Uber One subscription service without their consent, failed to deliver promised savings, and made it difficult for users to cancel the service despite its, quote, cancel anytime promises. Now, Jason, you had some notes about this, and we've pulled up a kind of amalgamation of your notes here about everything. I want you to walk us through why you think the FTC might be a little bit aggressive in this case.
I like what the FTC is doing with cracking down on tactics that are against consumer interest. So obviously I'm long Uber, you know, I don't have to state that. But when I see like Wall Street Journal and it's impossible to unsubscribe, I've talked about it here countless times. I hate this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's infuriating. Like, however easy it is to sign up, it should be equally easy to unsubscribe. The best practice should be you get an invoice every month. In the invoice, there's a clear unsubscribe button. And 2 weeks before a yearly comes out, you should get your invoice. And it should say, hey, in 2 weeks, your yearly's coming up, and do that. Consumers are smart. They use like Ramp cards or Mercury Bank or whatever to have like burner cards. And then we turn them off every year. All our SaaS subscriptions fail, or all new subscriptions fail. And then we decide if we want to do them. I also have a new thing. Like, I wanted to try the Financial Times and Economist apps because I wanted to have the app experience. I signed up for a year. Then I went immediately into my settings and canceled the subscriptions.
Yeah.
So I have it for the year, but I don't even have to worry about that moment because I know I can always re-sign up. It's no big deal. So in this dark pattern, I went and looked for myself. And I looked in the online help in the app. Because, you know, I want to know, because I have interest in this company, and I'm an Uber One subscriber. And I, you know, Dar is known for being like up on the up and up kind of guy, right? Like, he's the one who got Uber back into London. He's always working on these hygiene issues. He's really considered about this. So I was kind of shocked that they brought this, but I'm okay with them bringing it. Like, anything that's, you know, if somebody does a dark pattern or gets close to it, this is what I think the FTC should be doing. Not blocking M&A. But making sure that anti-competitive practices like dumping product for below what it's worth, you know, dark patterns, bundling, you know, all that kind of stuff. So in 10 seconds to 20 seconds and three or four clicks, I had found the help. I had found the unsubscribe button. And I found the Uber One area where it showed I'd saved $1,600 on 87 Uber Eats orders and 154 rides. Now that's what my savings were. So it looks like I'm saving $5 on every ride and $10 on every delivery. And those numbers are real. I know this because when they show you the invoice, they waive a bunch of fees and then they give you a greater deal. So I think Uber One's a great product. Perhaps I think they maybe, without knowing the fullness of the case, maybe when they first launched it, it was a little bit buried. You know, sometimes these things are more sloppiness than intent.
Yes.
Sometimes it's explicitly intent. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because I found it really quick. Dara's got an exemplary record here. And they should, my feeling on the FTC when they do these things is they should give a correction period so that these things can be resolved. They should just say, hey, we found this. You have 30 days to correct. Then we're going to take an action. That would make it like less drama. And I think because the stock went up over these 2 or 3 days, which probably has, you know, a lot to do with the overall market rally this week when Trump backed down from tariffs, this is like a, not even a speeding ticket, but good on the FTC for being vigilant about these things. I mean, I know that sounds counter, and great on DARA for addressing it quickly, if there even was an issue. Nailing product market fit. That's your top priority if you're a founder. But once you've got your product dialed in, you need to focus on selling it, letting the world know that, hey, I've got a great product that's going to solve problems and delight you. And of course, if you're a startup, you really want to get the big customers. We call them lighthouse customers. They send a signal across these vast customer bases that you can trust my product to land those deals. However, your security compliance has to be rock solid. And there are a bunch of certifications. You may have heard of them. SOC 2, ISO 27001. Those are the key to building trust and unlocking these opportunities, but they take time, they take energy, they take money. And pulling away from building and shipping your product and doing sales, it's hard to do. And that's where Vanta, V-A-N-T-A, comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one compliance solution for helping startups like yours get ready for your audits. And it's going to build a beautiful, strong security foundation quickly and painlessly, because Vanta automates the manual security tasks that are going to slow you down, helping streamline your audit. Whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vanta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many from Y Combinator, Techstars, and our own Launch Accelerator and Found University, who just trust and love Vanta. Simplify compliance. Get $1,000 off at Vanta.com/twist. I'm an investor in the company. Full disclosure, I love the company. Vanta.com/TWIST. I think that they can keep capitalism in the lane and protect consumers by simply writing a letter of correction. Just like, you know, if you had garbage outside your building and you're responsible for your sidewalk, they give you like a ticket. And if you clean it up and take a picture, you know, you're off the hook.
Do you feel like the dark pattern is a little bit of a slippery slope, or sort of a gray area? I mean, we were talking just last week in our Tips from the Trenches about how you want to de-emphasize elements of your UX that you don't want users to click on, and you want to emphasize the parts that you do. So,
yes,
like,
that was cancel, a big part of the talk. Great, so
you sort of make the cancel button gray it a little bit and make the keep going button like bright, colorful. So I feel like that's just a principle of good design. And it's, if you lean too heavily into it now, maybe you're violating a fairness principle.
Yeah. The execution is what matters. You'll know it's a dark pattern when you use the product. The FTC could very easily have a website, ftc.gov/dark patterns. So here's my suggestion to the FTC, ftc.gov/dark patterns. Anybody at any time can submit a little screen capture, a movie, and say, hey, I think that this kind of sucks. And you can put it in a category. And then if that results in a change or whatever, the FTC should give you $1,000 bounty. This is my best idea. So then it becomes
zero to it.
Now your competitors can rat on you if you're doing something bad, which is who will do it, right? Because if I've been in this situation where somebody's doing something nefarious, your competitor, and then the founder's like, well, I got to keep up with that. And you get in this escalation of, you know, who's going to, you know, bend the rules too much. So ftc.gov/rat.
I think we should do another round of our Founder Friday bracket competitions and keep that going.
We should. So we have an Elite Eight. We got past the Sweet 16. Our Elite Eight are Osprey from Houston, Texas, Whisper from Austin, Texas, Lifestack from New York, MedSimple from Florianopolis, Brazil, Pitchfire from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Tactune from Yerevan, Armenia, MomSub from Chicago, and Kippy from Sydney, Australia. So today, we're going to start the process of winnowing down these Elite Eights into a Final Four. We've got two matchups for today that are going to be two of our four finalists. Let's get started. Matchup number one, New York's Lifestack versus Florianopolis's MedSimple. Now, for this round, we asked each of the companies to send us a new video describing their two-year plan. We tried to keep it to around 2 minutes or less. So they're pitching us on what are they going to do for the first 2 years of their company to grow these businesses. We're going to start with New York's Lifestack. They're a smart calendar app that works along with wearable devices to adjust your daily schedule based on your current energy level.
Hi, Jason, Alex, and maybe Lon. Not sure if you're in this episode, but I'm now co-founder and CEO of Lifestack. And thank you so much for voting for us in the previous round. So here's a quick look at our two-year plan. Right now, our monthly burn is super low, just 13K per month, and we made 1.5K last month. So far, we've been laser focused on validating the initial market. And now that we're seeing some early traction, we're actually in the middle of raising a 1 million pre-seed round. And although we've already secured 200K in hard commits, we still need to raise the rest. So the first quarter will be about closing this round and bringing on our core team who've been working with us as part-time so far. And in Q3 and Q4 of this year, we'll focus on tightening up the product and then also laying the foundation for a social media content strategy. And we'd also love to run an efficacy study to back up our claims. So for example, being able to say users see X percent boost in productivity after using LifeStack. And starting in Q1 2026, we plan to roll out a team plan, something that our existing users have already been asking for. We think this could be a strong driver for growing our user base more quickly. And then once those early pieces are in place, we'd like to double down on influencer marketing and explore our partnerships with wearable companies to reach beyond early adopters. And ideally, we'll be profitable by that point, or at least showing enough traction to be in a strong position for a Series A.
All right. That was clean and crisp. Jason, thoughts?
I love it. I've met the company before. I have tried a couple of different modalities. You guys know I'm focused on four things in terms of my health: sleep, diet, exercise, meditation, equanimity. And I have been really, I use something called streaks, which is like a behavioral thing to try to get you to do streaks. How many days in a row did you drink water? That one's kind of come on and off for me. The thing I'm doing right now is I just have a little notepad, basically, a little document where I do every day. And I do what vitamins I took, what I ate, breakfast, lunch, dinner. I write it down, what exercise I did. I'll take a screenshot from Slopes or Fitness and put it in there. And I do get my 8 sleep report. And it does tell me like, hey, you got good sleep, you got deep sleep, you know, whatever. And all these metrics, putting them all together does help. I'm testing, there's Foundation Health and Superpower are the two competitors in blood testing. I think Foundation Health is a partner over at All In, I think. They sponsor something we do, really great product. And Superpower, I think, is, or Superpowers? Superpower, Superpower. That's the one, first one I've tried. They're both great products.
Superpower Health.
Superpower. Yeah, they're I think, going to sponsor Twist in the future. Anyway, these two products are awesome, too. People will pay for this stuff. It's going to be great. I think it's awesome. Yeah, and there's Superpower.
They just got a big feature over in TechCrunch as well, yesterday, actually.
Yeah, so these are great products, great startups, great category. I don't know if calendar is the right thing, but I think once you have your information in there, I do like that they have a theory that the calendar is the way to do it. And I like that they're connecting like for high performers and neurodivergent, like they know who they're going after. If you have a Whoop, you want to try this. If you have an 8 sleep, you want to try this. It's great. And then when AI starts looking at your calendar and figuring things out and how to coach you, it's going to be even better. Who else we got?
All right. Up next, MedSimple. This is a study app. They designed it specifically to help medical students from Brazil.
Guys, I am Vinicius. I am from Florianópolis, Brazil, one of the co-founders of MedSimple, and today I will present you our two-year business plan. So quarter-by-quarter goals of 2025, in the first quarter, we have already built a high-tech product called MedSimple Smart. We need to pay a leader dedicated 100% of the time in $5,000 per month. Second quarter, we will hire a new dev for the app and AI implementation. We need $2,000 per month. Third quarter, we will build a new product called MedSimple for Residents. We need one specialist for each medical subject area, costing $21,000 per month. Fourth quarter, creates a sales team dedicated to MedSimple Residents. Five sellers, it will cost $2,000 per month for all of them. And next year, in first quarter, aggressive market investment in MedSimple Residents, $75,000 for 3 months. Second quarter, marketing leaders in every medical school in Brazil to influence how end-year medical school students to buy MedSimple Residents module, $30,000 per month. Third quarter, market investment for the 4 month prep, and fourth quarter, 2 months prep investment in marketing too. Okay, it's the same course, but with less content to people study faster. We will need $5,000 per month for doing that. How much it will cost? You can see here quarter by quarter investment. Okay, and we will need $1 million in 2 years. Projected revenue growth. You can see here that we already did it here, the $370K USD, and we projected 8-9% of growth from this quarter to this quarter. Okay, here you see that you have a little decrease, but it's because our product is seasonal. People like to buy it in the beginning of the year and the end of the year. Okay, here you can see the growth of 162 from the first quarter of 2025 to this last quarter of 2026. Here our revenue in, by the end of 2025, we have our products done and you can invest 100% in marketing, focus on selling, selling. Our capital requirements, we require a capital investment of 1 million for a revenue of 3.65 million in 2 years. We require to stop using revenue anticipation because makes us losing margin capital investment in our own business. Anticipation costs a percent of our revenue. And where do you imagine MedSimple will be in 5-10 years? It will be the most important platform for Brazilian medical students. And maybe in the future, we're going to sell to Latin and to SMLE, Medicines for the World. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Fantastic. Real business, real customers. Obviously, there's going to be some criticism, Lon, of like, is it just an AI wrapper? And is it sustainable? And are we even going to have doctors? I think we're going to have doctors. I think we're going to have people talking to AI and their doctor at the same time, or talking to a verticalized AI and then maybe at mentioning their doctor, or a per hour or per minute doctor or nurse practitioner. So there's a lot of opportunity. You know, you start somewhere where there's a need, you build up a competency, you build up trust, and then other things emerge. I think you did the interview, Alex, with Thalamus and Jason over there.
I did.
And so that's like a perfect example of a company that started in one place, expanded adjacencies, et cetera. So I see a lot of adjacencies here. Do we have to pick our winner now for these two?
Yeah, those are your two choices. Okay. One of them is going forward to the final four.
Who you got, Alex, and why?
All right, I'm going to go with MedSimple because I just did a look into the number of medical students in Brazil. It's hundreds of thousands. I love their revenue traction. I thought it was a little weird they were going with here's how much it's going to cost versus here's how fast we're going to grow. I would flip those if I was pitching a VC, but I can absolutely see that med students will pay for this because I already know their predilection to pay for study materials. So I think it's got a big TAM and a lot of room to run.
Love that it's Latin America too. That's really hard market to crack. It's many different countries. People look at it as a monoculture. It's the opposite. It's kind of like the EU in that way. So if you do get something to work, you know, it becomes a little bit more defensible. Lon, what do you think?
I mean, I really like both of these companies. I like how zeroed in they are. They both have like, it's not a hugely broad moonshot. It's like, we know exactly what we want to build. Here's the market. Go, go, go. But I have to say, LifeStack really speaks to me. I live out of my calendar app. It's where I spend my whole day. I have ADHD. So I really appreciate what they're going for. And the idea of being able to sort of look at my day and manage my calendar with AI and with my inability to sometimes pay attention in mind, I think that's brilliant. I would use that.
Oh, wow. So now you guys got to put it on me.
Yeah, now it's on you.
It's on you.
I think, you know, I love both. This is a true jump ball. I would have both of them in the accelerator immediately. Do not pass go. Do not stop. Let's go. Do not stop. I don't know what the...
Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
That's when you go to jail, Monopoly.
Jason, okay, whatever it is. I don't want him to go to jail. I just wanted to. I think both of these businesses have a great shot of becoming significant $10 million a year businesses.
Agreed.
In the next 3, 4, 5 years, if they execute well and they stay focused on the real problem they have. What I love about both these companies, they both go after a specific problem. But I'm going to go with the revenue traction of Med.
Simple.
I'm going to go with the revenue traction of MedSimple. Okay.
Shout out,
let's wrap up there just on those two. We'll do the other ones on Friday because we have a guest coming up now.
All right. Coming up next on the show, we have Office Hours with a really cool company called GoShare. The founder has one of the best names out there because his last name is Savage. So I'm looking forward to this. Jason, we have talked ad nauseum on the show about small delivery robots, getting things from point A to point B, drones that drop off packages. Well, GoShare is working on trucks, which is a little bit pedestrian, but the company is certainly rolling right along. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Jason.
Sean, we're investors in the company. I know that. We did a syndicate at thesyndicate.com, and you've got a nice revenue base. Maybe you could just give the 1 or 2 sentence overview of what you do.
So GoShare is a tech-enabled logistics marketplace, and basically what we do is connect truck and van owners with businesses that want to offer a fast and efficient delivery option to their customers. And specifically, we focus on big and bulky goods. So think about like furniture, appliances, automotive parts, large electronics, and things like that.
Got it. Because the small things, you can just call UPS.
Yeah, that's
right. And you're done. Big things.
A lot of people don't want to deliver the big stuff.
Right. So you found an ideal customer profile. If we were to think about the customer base, I don't know if you have clients on your website or et cetera, if you could name some of the clients, or you could name some of the categories maybe. I mean, we know it's furniture and big things, but do you have any specific customers you could mention?
Yeah. So at the category level, you know, think about retail, building materials, automotive parts, food and beverage. So, you know, we work with like larger enterprise retailers, like a TJ Maxx, for example.
Got it. Customer list. Yeah.
We work with Sherwin-Williams. We deliver a lot of paint.
Okay.
We work with businesses of all sizes, but like our bread and butter over the last couple of years has been focusing on enterprise retail.
Well, the good news is we mentioned the robots, Lon. This is not going to go in the little tiny robot. You're not putting sheetrock in that, and you're not delivering a battery pack or an engine in a drone. So the good news is, this is hard work. What's your challenge right now with the business?
There's quite a few challenges. I mean, I think that, earlier you had mentioned, the FTC and Uber lawsuits. I think like dealing with all of the, we're in a heavily regulated industry. So dealing with the changing regulatory landscape has been really challenging. That's probably been something that we've been focused on for the last couple of years. There's been various rule changes and there's been court cases that have gone both ways. So I'm just trying to navigate that. And we operate in about 39 states across the U.S. So we're not only dealing with federal regulations, but we're dealing with state and also city regulations as well. So it's a lot to manage.
Sean, can you break down the regulations that are impacting your business? Is this gig economy stuff? Is this hazardous materials? Just dial that in for us.
It could be both. But yeah, gig economy stuff. So just, the balance between like contractors versus employees. And we do deliver some goods that are like hazmat. So that's also applicable, such as like large quantities of paint. I would say like that's definitely been one of the biggest challenges that we've had to overcome.
So on the gig economy, the good news is DoorDash and Uber and Lyft and any number of people are kind of way ahead of you in bigger targets. So you can draft behind their best practices, I suppose. And because this is a B2B service, you know, I would think some of your supply side, the people who are moving stuff, have LLCs, have like actual companies. So, you know, for it to trigger the gig stuff, you know, you'd have to be an individual contributor with like a social security number as opposed to a corporate ID. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's generally correct. So all of the delivery professionals, as we call them on the platform, are theoretically running their own business. So it's either a sole prop or an LLC. So I think that does help out. Yeah, it doesn't completely remove us from being a target, but the fact that it's, a lot of these guys do have their own business set up, especially if you have like a box truck or a cargo van in particular, those are commercial vehicles. You're clearly running a business there.
So that's actually could be a very interesting way for you to preempt this is on your website, in your training materials, in the marketing, making it explicitly clear. We help businesses that are shipping stuff find businesses, not, rides, businesses that could service them. And we have a take rate, et cetera. And then letting people know, hey, and literally having this in your FAQ or your training. If you're an Uber driver, if you're a moving company and you charge cash, and you're part of the gig economy, here's the steps for you to become a business and here's the benefit and the cost. And if you build that out as a section, when they come to you, you can say, listen, I'm acting in good faith. We are saying on our website, here's how to create an LLC. Here are some places you can go do that. Here's the cost of it. Here's some links to the specific tax pages in cities. Look for this. Make sure it's by the books. And you kind of create that training materials. That would be very powerful. And another reason it would be powerful is states love to have people incorporate because they make money from that. And it takes underground money and takes it out of the cash on Craigslist market and moves it to the above ground
you know, and now you're a white knight. And when they come to you, you say, listen, we're trying to city of San Francisco, you know, Delaware, New York, we're getting you more registrations. And here's how we're doing that. And those people are paying corporate taxes and then having to pay personal taxes again, or they have a pass through, whatever. So we're taking what's on Craigslist or, you know, word of mouth and cash being given under the table to deliver stuff. And we're moving it above ground to collect taxes. That's going to be really the way to handle this. And what I always tell people is, you know, if you're bending, you're not bending the rules, but for people who do like to bend rules, like maybe Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, and Airbnb did in the early days where there was an interpretation of who's benefiting, qui bono, right? Like, who benefits? When the consumer benefits or, you know, the city benefits, and you can point to that and say, look, it's not that we're benefiting from this. You know, when you're Airbnb and you do it in New York and you have to get a license, or in Lake Tahoe, you need a license and they collect taxes on that, that consumer is benefiting. There's more availability and the state is benefiting because they're getting tax revenue, and the citizens and the school and the fire department are collecting and, you know, paid for. That's awesome. Now, if you are doing it and you're benefiting, like the example I've used in the past is Parker Conrad from Zenefits did his little, you know, hey, let's get through insurance certifications faster. It was a totally fine concept. Like, oh yeah, I want to get people certified faster. But he was kind of bending the rules, like taking them through tests that were kind of rote with this like toolbar extension or something that made them look like they were reading each page and they weren't. That was the allegations, or that was the charge that, you know, wound up in a little sanction from the SEC, I think, and some of these insurance companies. That felt like that was benefiting Zenefits, not the consumer. So just ask yourself that, who am I benefiting? You know, and I think you have the high ground there. Anything else you're struggling with?
Well, yeah, first, let me just say all really great points. And yeah, GoShare kind of has positioned ourselves that way for since the beginning, as, you know, we're working with other business owners. These are guys who, you know, own a truck or van. They want to run their own business and they're kind of using GoShare.
Is that explicitly explained on your website somewhere?
It's explicitly explained in the website, the terms of service, the marketing. And we do encourage all of the delivery professionals to, you know, start their own LLC if they can, if not a sole prop, get commercial insurance, do it the right way.
Yeah. Having a landing page that was called, you know, GoShare, your GoShare.com or co, yeah, GoShare.com/doing it right. And how it's framed, super important. So then if you did get into, you know, a debate or a discussion with a local city or something, and you said, oh, have you read our Doing It Right page? And, you know, we're doing it right. And so this is called framing in psychology, how you frame it. So you're preempting, and you're also, in a way, creating a meme for that person in government when they go back to their meeting and saying, you know, GoShare, they're doing it right. Which is what you want them to say.
That's right. The framing is important for sure.
Would you do landing pages for each city, Jason? Because GoShare has a lot of, you know, cities
that it
works in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, doing it right in Atlanta, doing it right in San Francisco, doing it right in this. Then you could say that page could have the title and the metadata, how to set up an LLC or how to set up a business in San Francisco for shipping. Is there anything else challenging in the business?
Yeah, there's a few things, but probably the second biggest one would just be, you know, over the last couple of years, there's been so many different supply chain disruptions and demand fluctuations, starting with, you know, COVID-19 pandemic, and now, you know, all these geopolitical tensions and tariffs. It's definitely causing disruptions throughout the supply chain, and we are kind of like the last mile of the supply chain, so we might be the last to feel it, but if this keeps up, it's going to trickle down. To where it might impact.
We literally just talked about this because we know Wall Street got hit first with the tariffs. We saw stock prices. Then next, we started to see some layoffs. And then today we talked about on the program, what were the two examples we gave them today on the program, Alex Lon? There was M&A being paused.
Yes.
There was one other one. What was the
hiring.
Other one?
Hiring.
Oh, was hiring. Yeah,
she was hiring. Yeah, layoffs.
Yeah. Hiring, open job positions, which is like in the same zone as layoffs, but slightly different. So that means freezing hiring and laying people off. So yeah, it's eventually going to hit you when, if Restoration Hardware
just picking an example here, their stock went down 70%. They can't get stuff into the country. They're on pause, or Cuts Clothing is on pause. If you were moving some of their stuff, yeah, they're going to be like, hey, nothing to move. Here's the great news. You're a marketplace and you are asset light. You don't own the trucks. When all of this chaos happened during COVID, Airbnb had too many employees and their business shut down, but it didn't die. If they were a hotel chain, let's say a boutique hotel chain, and they didn't have enough wherewithal, or they were a cruise line, they would have had to just shut down and lay everybody off. They did do layoffs during that time because they'd overheard. Uber had the ride sharing shut down, and then Uber Eats soared. So I would want you to think about being anti-fragile. This is a great book. And what anti-fragile means, people think it's not being fragile. I think it actually the more proper definition, and my gentleman here, my co-host, will look it up exactly what Nassim Taleb means by it. But my understanding it is, in a chaotic environment, you might do even better. So it's not just resilient. It's like, no matter what happens, your product is valuable and you are not going to have problems, you know, in stormy weather. Go ahead, Lon. You got it?
Nassim Taleb's concept of anti-fragility goes beyond resilience. Resilience involves resisting shocks and returning to the same state. Anti-fragility means thriving and gaining strength from those shocks.
Okay, so let's think about that. I don't have the exact example of how you could have anti-fragility in your business, not just resiliency. You have resiliency as a marketplace. If you keep your cost to contractors and you keep it to a small number of full-time employees, if you have a shock to the system, like you have 50% less stuff moving through the system, you can tell your team, really hard thing to do, we're going to furlough half the team, or we're going to need everybody for 20 hours a week. We understand if you quit and have to go find another job. But you can take emergency measures like that because you haven't built up a bunch of infrastructure. You don't own the trucks. The person who does own the trucks, they got a problem. They have to become anti-fragile as well. Like, what do you do with your trucks if you can't ship other stuff? Maybe you can, there's another use for them. So yeah, think about that. And think about, you know, if there is a shock.
Yeah.
If there was, I don't know if the gentleman with me have any thoughts on creatively, the first thing is to make sure your costs are incredibly, you know, appropriate, that you're not a fat company, that you're, you know, if you were doing advertising as an example, you don't have like a 5-person full-time advertising team. You have one person who's responsible for marketing and advertising, and they use a series of freelancers and they go up and down.
And we kind of experienced that during COVID. I'd say like the first couple of months, like Q2 of 2020, it was extremely chaotic. A lot of retailers closed their doors. It negatively impacted us. But ultimately, we got stronger over time because it turns out everyone needed delivery during that time. So ultimately, like, our marketplace grew a lot after taking a little bit of a dip in that first, you know, in that first April through June period of 2020. And there was a lot of demand for what we were offering. So
what else could a person with a van, typically the category is man with a van?
Yeah.
I think is the category. I think literally that's what it was called on Craigslist at point.
That's right.
A little sexist, but in the man with the van category, what else could man with the van do? Man with the van can also do waste removal, garbage removal, right? Mm-hmm. They could also do, if they had gardening equipment, landscaping or gardening. I'm just picking out like two or three categories of what they could do.
Moving is probably the other really big one.
Moving, sure. So I think maybe in your FAQ or your training of doing it right and doing it right by city, here are two or three other businesses you can add to your man with a van business, or, you know, dudes with a truck or whatever it is, you know, two persons and a truck. I don't know. We'll get gender neutral on this. Two individuals.
I think with alliteration, we can always go with man with a van.
This is a great thing for Gemini.
Have truck will travel.
Have truck will travel. There you go, what else can a truck do, right? Well, what else can people with a truck do? Well, they can certainly do groundskeeping, and you sometimes have to remove a bunch of stuff from the ground. Yeah. So then here's another idea. What if their businesses, you had a page builder on your business where they could have a landing page, or you could build them a landing page?
Yes.
Using your software, now you provide a tool for them to build a page to SEO.
Yes.
You give them a domain name, or it's, you know,
GoShare
LonAndJCal. Or LonAndJCal.GoShare. So you know they have their own kind of domain space, and then they pay you $100 a year for that page, or $25 a month. Now you got a second revenue stream. It's sticky. They take orders through you. You help them process it because they don't have the ability to build a landing page. And you could actually train them. Hey, here are six services you could offer when they click on that they're doing moving, you know, apartment moving and whatever. You could actually have the pricing and the landing page that defines it and get a quote and all that could be done and abstracted for them, because I'm guessing man with the van does not have a website team on their, you know, on their team.
No, very unlikely. They may have a website at best, but no, yeah.
Probably like a great Squarespace site, a great Wix site, something like that. Great job, Sean. Great to be in business with you. Where can people find out more?
Visit our website, goshare.com. We also have mobile apps for iPhone and Android. And you can, if you want to reach me directly, LinkedIn or Twitter is great.
Okay. Or they could just email, I suppose, Sean at goshare.com.
Yeah,
taking
that's
the
right.
Guest, first name.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Pleasure to be
awesome.
Here.
Continued success and really great to be in business.
Yeah, great to have you.
Yeah, great job.
Yeah, thank you. You too.
I love doing the office hours here for two reasons, Lon and Alex. Number one, the brainstorming is awesome, right? I get so much out of the brainstorm. It gets me creatively going. Yeah. And number two, it gives me an excuse to catch up with one of our portfolio companies in an efficient way so that y'all who are listening, who are entrepreneurs, can hear a VC, you know, an investor and their founder just try to figure some stuff out, right?
Yeah.
And tease it out. We've had this great program, founder.university. If you're thinking of starting a company, get two or three of your friends who like to build and then apply to founder.university. And we did this new thing last week. Instead of all 300 companies getting together, we get together in groups of 20 or 30. And so we're really learning in the front lines in 2025 what the acute problems are. Then we take those problems, also the wins, and we have a really good dialogue with 20 founders at once. Everybody gives their wins. Everybody gives their fails or blockers. And then we try to work through the blockers. And it's kind of like a mastermind group. It's kind of like Founder Fridays, except at Founder University. And we did it last week. We're doing it again this week. It was really powerful. And the amount of energy coming out of it and knowledge sharing is just crazy.
Yeah. I was a little nervous before running my first session because, you know, I'm not a founder. I'm just some guy. But they've got so much to talk about. Like they barely needed me. It was a really great group and they had a lot to say. I did want to say before we wrap up, Launch Accelerator Cohort 34 kicks off today.
Awesome.
So we did want to give them a shout out. Congrats to all the participating companies.
Startups,
I have. Yeah, I have the list here. And applications for LA 35 now open, launchaccelerator.co.
Want to see all the companies in Launch 34, we are going to have them today in the Twist ticker, which you can find at thisweekinstartups.com, and make sure to sign up for that. It's our daily newsletter, mostly focused on the Twist 500, but we always make room for internal news. So the names will be there.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.